Welcome to the Student Athlete Preparation Podcast, brought to you by Simply Faster, the industry's leading sports technology and coach education platform. Check out all their products and their coaches' blog at Simply Faster. That's SimpliFaster.com. Today, I got to sit down with the head speed, strength, and conditioning coach at Estrella Foothills High School in Goodyear, Arizona, Clay Bewley.
Welcome to the Student Athlete Preparation Podcast, hosted by high school strength and conditioning coach, Cody Hughes. This ain't your normal podcast, y'all. He's bringing real discussions about real strategies to improve the student athlete development and preparation process. New episodes every Friday with guests who are all about keeping it real. It'll warn you now. You might get your feelings hurt. The mics are on. The takes are hot. Enjoy this episode. Here's your host, Cody Hughes.
Clay, what's going on, my man? How we doing?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic, man. Couldn't be happier. Just honored and privileged to be a guest on the pod. Been listening now for a little while since you guys started. Listen to every episode. Happy to be a part of it, man. It's an honor.
Yeah, I'm just glad you could come on, man. Catching you in between breaks with a newborn, bro. And things are tough right now, huh? Them eyes are saggy, man. Keeping a bang energy on go, huh?
All the kids have been messing me like, Coach, you know those aren't good. I was like, guys, I know. But sometimes you just need to make it through the day. It's the, that 10 to 1, 1 to 4, feeding every 3 hours during the night stretch gets a little rough. But you know what? We're living, man.
No doubt. No doubt. Well, man, Clay and I have known each other now for about 3 years. I want to bring something up that he doesn't even know I'm going to bring up. And I met Clay in 2018, and if you want to know about this part of my life, it wasn't a great time for me. And if you listen to last week's episode, you'll hear in depth on my story a little more. But this is when I was in Colorado, and I was in between jobs. I just quit a job that with not much expectations, and I was kind of in a really rough spot. And the only thing that was going on, I got invited to the 2018 Rocky Mountain Regional Conference for the NHSSCA. Down at Valor Christian in Denver. And, you know, I was going down to that conference and didn't know what to expect. And before Clay goes into his background, I just wanted to say that at that conference, you know, I had business cards made out of card stock. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't have a job at the time. I was kind of freaking out and just kind of shaking hands and hoping for the best. And listening to Clay speak, I remember it so vividly. It was about making the big time where you're at. And that's super cliche. And even though it's so true, but the one thing that stood out to me the most, Clay, was that when you literally showed on that screen that you had applied to over 250 schools or 250 jobs, or is that above, below? Where
am I at? I applied to 201 jobs. I got 201 rejection letters, and I got accepted on my 202nd application.
And so he literally listed every single one. Like, you kept up with it. Like, I was like, dude, that's insane. And it put a lot of perspective in my mind because I wasn't even close to that. You know, I was so young, man. I haven't gone through anything like that, you know. And then hearing your story and about what you've gone through and of getting to the job you needed and the jumps you've made and the sacrifices you made for your family, Clay, I just want to tell you, one, I don't think you realize this, but that day meant a ton to me as a person. Like, it helped me. It revived me, gave me perspective to keep going. And now 3 years later, here I am in a much better spot, to say the least.
I just
have to say thank you. Like, that's why I want people like you on my podcast, because it's people with perspectives and people that get the big picture like you have. And you probably didn't know it then, but man, you had a serious impact on me.
Wow. That's, I don't even know what to say. That I got goosebumps hearing that story. The funny thing is that list started just for me to stay organized, and then it just kept on with motivation and just for gratitude that every time I get like frustrated with something or I get, you know, down on something, I just remember what I've gone through just to get where I'm at. Because, you know, and I'm not that much older. I think I'm only like 1 or 2 years older than you.
Yeah.
But I was going through, that was also a tough time in my life, because when I first got to Australia, I wasn't teaching. They didn't have a teacher in spot opening for me. I did all the strength conditioning, but I was also security working, making like $12.80 an hour, and then running everything after school. It's the only time that the security guard ever wrote the program for the teacher, and it was encouraged. Yeah. That's the only time this ever happened. And so like, I was barely making it there, but you know, I turned, and of course with a lot of support from the coaches that are there that believed in me, the admin that believed in me, and turned it. And now it's, you know, it's a pretty great thing. It's a pretty great program.
Yeah, man. That's awesome.
Took it from a, you know, average, like, you know, whatever public school to, something that's being really recognized now. So
yeah, it's huge. Happen. I mean, we're 3 years ahead from that spot now. But take us back even further, Clay. You don't have to go too far, but tell us about the journey that Clay Bewley made as a strength coach.
So going way back, I am the prototypical, I joke around I'm the example of AWB genetics. And I joke around that AWB genetics is average white boy. That is me to a T. You know, all my mentors all laugh at that, but the not funny part is it's true. I was your try hard, not that big, not that strong, not that gifted athlete who just lived in the weight room and lived on the practice field and just worked his butt off. You know, from a small town in Northern Arizona, Prescott, Arizona, great place. Some of you guys who have watched the movie Only the Brave about the Yavapai 19 firefighters, that's where that took place. I actually knew quite a few of those guys growing up. And so that's where I'm from. And, you know, didn't get a ton of looks from most schools. No, most schools aren't looking at 200-pound guards. That's not really in a hot commodity. It's not a hot commodity, but, you know, small school, and, you know, you play what you can do. And didn't have very many offers, and had a preferred walk on to a Division II in California, and decided to take my life another route. Served a 2-year mission instead, and that 2-year mission really shaped me, because it really taught me that discipline and taught me perspective and taught me, you know, what it's like to go through life and maybe people don't want you there.
So when you say 2-year mission,
through the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So a 2-year service missionary. And so, went helping people and did that for 2 years, came back, and actually got into the personal training side of things. I thought I was going to do that until a roommate of mine came. He was volunteering at a high school in Flagstaff, Arizona. That's where I was going to my undergrad. And he's like, Clay, these kids just like suck so bad. Would you mind coming and just helping us out of the way room and help us on the practice field? And I was like, yeah, I got a little bit of time. Sounds good. I think I can help out with that. And that's where I caught the coaching bug. And I was like, man, you know, training these moms and grandmas and like older people fitness, that's just not for me. That's not where the passion is. It paid the bills, but it wasn't driving me.
Yeah.
So made the transition, got in with NAU strength conditioning under Coach Cody Hodgson. Was with him for undergrad for about 2.5-3 years, and then took a stint at JU at Jacksonville University under Coach Andrew Bates, Coach Marcy Hoppe, who's at Mississippi State now. Yep. She's heading up women's basketball. Got to coach under those two, and they did a fantastic job, you know, breaking a lot of habits of mine and believing in me and helping me. And so got to go with them, and from there spent 2 years in Angelo State living that D2 life in Nowhere, Texas, and absolutely loved my time in San Angelo working with Chad Herring. He was my mentor, and a couple other great coaches that I got to work with. Dom Walker is now the head at UT Arlington. He was there with me, and Glenn Revel, who's, you know, a pretty prominent member of an HSSCA in Texas. I forget the name of his new school. I'm gonna put that up to rolling on like 3 hours of sleep. I forgot what school he's at, but
that's all right,
was there, and he's a great friend of mine. And then from there, when I got done there, spent a season with UNLV football under Coach Keith Belton, who's now the director at UCLA, and we didn't win enough games, and we got gone. And so transitioned to the high school ranks. Didn't think I was going to do that, because you saw that list. That list was big. I applied everywhere.
Yeah, man.
But landed a high school, and then realized that, hey, this is the place for me. This is the population for me. This is where I can have the biggest impact. And that's past 11 years of my life. Got married about 9 years ago. 9-year anniversary is coming up here on the 28th. Got All a right. 5-year-old Lindell. She's loving being a big sister. And then, of course, Lawson, who is almost 3 weeks old now.
So 3 weeks old, man. That first month is brutal. I don't know what it's going to be like when we have our second. You know, my son, Beckham, he's turning 2 this Sunday, and which will be really fun, 2-year-old birthday going on. But I don't know what it's going to be like when we got to shift from zone defense to man-to-man. I don't know what that's going to be like, but I'm not really looking forward to it yet.
Man, you know how the first one changed everything? The second one changed everything, too.
Yes.
But I wouldn't trade it for the world. It's been great.
Yeah, man, no doubt. They say have a family early so you can enjoy your family longer is what I've always heard, man. So
yeah, I agree with that.
So cool. Well, Clay, let's get into it a little bit, get into the nuts and bolts. You know, It's really glad to hear that you've found your impact at the high school level. And one thing I try to ask, you know, and I want everybody to hear it, especially high school coaches, you rolled into a place in Australia that I'm guessing didn't have a strength coach before, right?
Yeah, it was just 4 coaches who were running it.
So I want to talk me through that lifespan of what that looked like. Cause like you said, you started as you were there and you were working security. You weren't as really a teaching spot. You were kind of doing the strength conditioning. And talk about kind of what the culture and vibe was around the school when you first got there to where it is now and like what that dynamic was like. Because everybody's wondering, you know, what would a strength coach do? You know, like, is it important? Like, I want to, because this was the birth of a position, really.
It really was.
At your high school. So I want to hear you to shed some light on that in your situation.
So when we came in, it was very much like they weren't going to know what to expect. There wasn't a system put in place. There wasn't, you know, every sports had different standards. So like going from one coach to another, one season to another, different philosophies, different things. So there was a lot of spinning of wheels. Mm-hmm. And of course, yeah, you're going to get some strong kids. Yeah. You're going to get some fast kids. You know, in your population, you're going to have athletes, but really at the high school level, unless you're at like a big time place where you got a ton of athletes, the vast majority of kids you're going to be working with aren't student athletes. They're students participating in athletics. And so with those kids, it's how can I best provide them an opportunity to grow and to be established, and the best opportunity to grow, not just as an athlete, but as a person, as a human, as a future, you know, husband or future wife or future spouse, future leader at that point, is provide them with a system and allow them a system to be able to grow. And so putting in organization, putting in system, making sure everything's scheduled. This is when you're going to come. You're going to check in with your coaches. This is the standards of expectations of you coming every single time. That sets up for success because that foundation is there. And then that allows us to work. Mm-hmm. Kids know that when they come in, our 2 standards are take nothing away from your own success. Don't take away from success of anybody else. And then we have our safety rules, which you got to have, you know,
sure,
clips on the bar, have a spotter if you're required for spotter, that stuff. That's pretty standard. That's pretty self-explanatory. But having a set standard of this is your job. This is your job to come in and train. We're not working out. We are training because we have a goal in mind. And the goal is win this game, win this region, win this state title, you know, get better, get stronger, get faster. This is goal driven. And now with our VBT, which we'll cover again later, it's data driven. So we're adding the sports science on top of things. But your job is to train. Whatever is going on in your life, leave it at the door for 45 minutes. You can pick it up when the time comes. I want you to escape it, and I want you to get away from it so you can process it. And so just having that mentality and that standard really changed everything. I mean, back before the shutdown, we were rolling and in context on these numbers, my school has a little over 1,100 kids in it, which is in Arizona organizations. I'm not sure how, you know, I'm not sure where you're at, you know, how they divide up with populations, but
right,
where we're at in our 4A, that's one of the smallest. We're like one of like the 4 or 5, maybe even like 3, one of the 3 smallest of our category in the state. Like we are strapped for students, and you know, we'd love to get some more in there, but we need to make sure, because we're never going to win by rolling out kids. It's not going to happen. We're going to win by our kids being well-trained, being well-disciplined, and putting forth good effort. So that standard's there. And so going through that and having my role there and knowing that if you are going to Coach Clay, this is what you're going to expect. You are expected to be there on time. You are expected to be disciplined. You're expected to work hard, and you're expected to have fun with it. Mm-hmm. And just having that standard across not just one sport, but across all sports, and all sports being treated with the respect and dignity that deserve that. Because what happens a lot of times is all football gets it, or all basketball gets it, or right. all baseball gets it. But making sure that every team gets it, yes, making sure those sports get it, but making sure the cross-country kids, that they are given time, making sure that your tennis kids are given the time, make whatever sport it is, because I'm in charge of 22 of them. It's 22 and me with the occasional sport coach who comes in. And before the shutdown happened, we had about 225 kids during the day, and we'd have anywhere from 75 to 150 after school. So we'd be servicing about 300 to 350 kids per day in our weight room 4 to 5 days a week. Then the shutdown happened. That messed everything up, and we're trying to build it back up. But sure. today we had, I think it was just a little under 125 participations in our weight room today.
Awesome.
And so we're getting it back to where it used to be, and we're getting the enrollment back up. We're getting things back. Knowing that everybody is required to work and everybody will be coached. The only time you don't get coached is if you've proven that you don't listen and that you don't want to get better. Then you may not get coached.
Yeah.
But everybody else, if you have a willing heart and listening ears, you will get better today.
So I want to hear what your relationship with the sport coaches were like. Because when you come in, I know the prototypical strength coach, all right, like coming in with I know my stuff. I need to prove my ground here. I need to show that I'm going to be of value. And if you have a sport coach that already has shown some pride in running a weight room, it's going to be really hard for them to let go of some things, right? Were there any hard conversations you had to have with sport coaches, or was there any I don't know about problems, but just, you know, issues you had to work through communicatively about getting on the same page as far as training goes? And your relationship with those sport coaches, because I get multiple DMs a week, man, of just coaches asking, like, you know, like I've been reading everything you guys have been putting out, and I'm a member of the NHSSCA, but my coach, that's really hard to get around, because head coaches, at the end of the day, it's their team, and you can't make decisions for them, even if it's right or incorrect. Did you have any situations, or were things pretty smooth sailing as far as philosophy?
For the most part, things were smooth sailing, because I pretty much told, because when I came there, I tried to meet with every coach individually, and a lot of coaches were very pumped that I was coming. A lot of them were very excited, right, just because of the fact of how it was before and what was being brought to the table. What also really helped, and shout out to Coach Gutwein, our head basketball coach, was he was part of my interview, and he's one of the more influential coaches on campus. And so when he interviewed me and he gave his good to hire me, he told the other coaches that, like, I'm super impressed with this guy and I think he's going to do good. So I came in with that.
Awesome.
But then also proving and showing the coaches every single day, and showing them, like, hey, he's here early every day. It's organized every day. It's well coached every day. It's the same. They're expecting the same thing, because that's what the standard is.
Mm-hmm.
That helped win over more and more coaches throughout that first year. And I even told my AD the first thing I want to do is I want to establish the culture. I don't care about what the numbers are, or how strong we are, or how fast we run. If we can establish our culture that first year, everything else will come. And sure enough, it did. And the coaches who didn't agree with philosophy, I would just ask them, you know, what do you want out of your athletes? And usually you get the same thing. Well, I want them jumping higher. I want them faster. I want them this, want them that. Usually it's revolving around the same thing. Usually it's, mm-hmm. you know, saying the same things, maybe in a little different words. And that's where you break down. Okay, you see this workout. This is dealing what you're going with. And pointing out this is why, and just being an open book, and just telling them, anytime you guys want to see my program, you can see my program. Anytime you want to ask a question. I'm an open book. Just let me know, and just being open and honest. And then this is something I learned from Coach Herring, Chad Herring, my mentor at Angelo, is he would always tell me that, Clay, we are the assistants. Yeah. You are there to help. You are not, even though we have this title, even though we have this, you are there to be the assistant. You are there to help, and letting them know that I am your assistant. I'm not coming in here trying to take control over from you. I'm here to help you.
Yeah.
And I'm using my expertise to help, and kind of fighting that fire with water instead of fighting that fire with fire. Because generally what happens, especially when egos get into play, is I know this, I know this. And it's an argument. We see it on Twitter every freaking day. I know better than you. I know better than you. Well, guess what? We're both trying to accomplish the same thing. Here's what I have. Here's what I can offer you.
Yeah.
And just kind of being open. And that really helped. And then also just me winning them over just with me being me.
What about your results? Because that's the thing that I feel like gets lost a lot, is that we want to drive. You know, I've talked about this with a couple other guests, that at the end of the day, results matter. I don't care what you say. It matters. Oh, and if you don't get results, you're it's like, man, you look good. And like, and you sure did paint a pretty picture, but that doesn't mean anything, right? What if you're like, everybody wants to say, trust the process, but if your process isn't yielding results, and you might not want to trust that process, right? So like, I'm sure results you were getting for those coaches was just continuing to confirm that, like, if we're not following Coach Clay's plan, we're in trouble.
Well, that we did see our injuries go down. Of course, kids looked better. They're performing better. And, you know, one thing, you know, I know we're supposed to save what irks us and what we don't like about the strength conditioning community to the end. But one thing that, you know, is a truth, but nobody really wants to admit to, is you could have the best trained athletes in the world, but if they're not very good at their sport, they're going to lose.
Yeah.
Like, and it's ultimately that. And fortunately, you know, when you're at a place that, you know, has had success, but if you've been in the game long enough, and if you've been at a public school long enough, or just kind of in general, there's going to be ebbs and flows in talent.
Yeah.
It's going to be there. But just knowing that the kids are treated the same, and across the board, the talented and maybe the not as talented are improving. You know, their physical capacities are getting better. And that's when it's like their physical capacities are improving. Now it's up to the sport coaches to get those physical capacities to transfer over to the field. Gotcha. Here's my data. And I take pretty meticulous data as best I can. You know, I'm not always able to get maxes on everybody, but I'm able to usually get, you know, some jump tests, verts, broads, stuff like that. And then some estimated lifts. And now with VBT, I'm able to get a little bit more. But I'm able to show, like, here's all of our PRs. This is working. This is getting better. And these kids are performing better. Was it good enough to possibly win that game? Maybe. It was good enough to win that one. It wasn't good enough to win this other one. There's a school out here in Arizona that's Saguaro High School, and they're one of the powerhouses. 2 years ago, we played them in the playoffs. They were the 1 seed. We were the 16 seed. There was 50 Division I recruits in the state of Arizona that year, and I believe they had like 27 of them.
Goodness gracious.
And they're at our level, which isn't the biggest. We're a 4A that goes all up to 6, kind of let you know. It was something stupid like that, or like 50 Division I's in Division IV.
You might as well river dance to try to win that game, man.
Pretty much, yeah. And so our guys, you know, for the most part, held their own. They fought hard. They weren't necessarily pushed around that much. You know, we're physically healthy all the way throughout. They're just better than us. And, you know, some kids got down that we get lost 49-0, but I didn't feel bad about that loss. Like, you're going to eventually go against some pretty good dudes if you've been in the game long enough. And honestly, you know, if you lose one-on-one to Kobe, is it really that, like, really like that much of a dishonor that,
right,
that dude beat you one-on-one? Like, it's pretty good for a reason.
Yeah.
And that's true, keeping data. And so for the coaches out there, the NHSSCA coaches are like, oh, this coach, if you keep your data and show like these kids are getting better, this is the data that shows. You can't argue. Like, if a kid ran a 4.9 and I ran a 4.7, you can't argue that. They got better. If they added 2-3 inches on their vert, if they're lifting more, or if you have the technology, if they're, you know, producing more force, these kids are improving under this program. Now it's your job to get that to apply. I already did mine. Now it's time for you to do yours.
Yeah. Yeah. That's tough, you know.
It is tough, but, you know, sometimes you just got to stand your ground. Like, these kids are getting better. Like, hey, nobody got injured this year.
So
hey, you see this kid who landed awkwardly. They didn't get hurt. They got up, little sprain. They're all good. Guarantee you, if they were untrained, that would be a knee, or that'd be an ankle, or that'd
right.
be something else.
Right. That's so true. But I'm gonna play devil's advocate to you.
Oh, you can as well. Feel free.
So the one thing that I can't really stand, and me and my buddy who's going to be on this podcast eventually, Kyle Rogers, and I hope he's listening because he's going to appreciate me shouting him out because he's the one that has really brought this to light. I think that strength conditioning coaches at this point are really leaning too much on all we do is build the engine. Like at the end of the day, if we don't have more impact on the outcome of the sport, then our value really isn't very high. Like if literally all we do is just train qualities, very generic qualities, like, so we can pick this apart, right? We can talk.
Absolutely.
So I'll give you an example in our training program, because that's all I know, right? It's all I've done. It's like, for example, if you break down where offensive line, I'm talking to an offensive lineman.
Yes.
Where they play.
The 200-pound guard, man.
But if you watch, so if you, this, another huge shout out to Thomas Blazer out in California. I don't know if you follow Tom on Twitter.
I do. But, he has some fire tweets.
And he, well, just, we've had some great conversations about O-line play. Cause I've always wanted, like, man, I'm not real sure how we get our guys to move better in the context of what they're asked to do demanded on the field. And if you, and this is what helps with me going to practice and watching drills, just watch individual, watch how the O-line coach teaches. I didn't realize how much offensive linemen play on the inside of their feet, knee on the inside of their heel, that they, if you watch a left tackle stance, they are adductor driven like crazy, and they push laterally all the time, right? And they have to be really good pressure to pressure, which that's terminology that comes from LeCharles Bentley, at least that's what I've heard from O-line performance, that when you're pressure to pressure, they're very much on the inside of their foot, almost, you know, everted or inverted a little bit. I get those two mixed up all the time. But on the inside of their feet, very adductor driven, knees somewhat inside the foot, which if you looked at that in the squat, you would go red flag, right? No good. Well, that's how they play, right? And when they're pressure to pressure with their in that position and they're so adductor driven, that's when I started to bring up, as you've noticed in my programming, a box squat. You've probably noticed mm-hmm. that lately come up.
Oh yeah, you definitely set some people off. Like, oh my gosh, he's not squatting.
Well, see, I set a lot of people up for that, so that's on me. I apologize. It was clickbait. That's yes, funny. It was on purpose. Not for likes and retweets, but to create conversation. And that's what it did. And it helped solve some issues for some coaches. So if you got problems with clickbait that brings value, you can click unfollow real quick as far as I'm concerned. It's just an easy way to get engagement. There's a huge difference between that and just trying to catch some clout. And that's not what it's about. But so we started box squatting and opening up our hips big time and being able to access more hip flexion and actually get into more abduction and get some strength in that area. And our O-line coach who was doing drills and stuff, they're doing one-on-ones kind of in the spring, and they're going, dude, we're just so much stronger. We're so much better. And I'm like, I'm glad. So, like, that's just one example of how exercise selection matters outside of just qualities. It's got to – then there's – and I'm not mimicking sport. I'm training in the same context as sport. You know what I'm saying?
There's a big difference between – trying to mimic the sport and training for the demands of sport. Those are two very different things. I guess a good context of this, something I love to do with my soccer players is, because I'm a big believer in manual resistance neck exercises, mm-hmm. doing a lot of manual resistance neck to be able to protect the brain.
Yep.
And so, you know, that would be,
Soccer's the number one leading concussion, isn't it? Is it number one?
I believe it's per number one numbers is football, if I remember correctly, and then soccer is per capita.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, and I thought women's soccer was even higher. Like, yeah, people were crazy how much women's soccer need to train neck. Yeah, big time.
Nobody talks. Everybody's all worried about concussions, and nobody talks about that stuff with women's soccer. You know, neck exercises would be going for the demands of the sport versus. Because you're strengthening that area mm-hmm. versus attach an iron neck or a band. And like, I know people listening to this won't be able to see, but like trying to like pretend to do a head, that would be trying to mimic the sport. You're not trying to mimic the sport. You're trying to train through the demands.
Right.
And one thing that I know people sometimes ask me because, and this is something I've talked about in other podcasts, kind of going, and this is more for my situation. Like you talked about, your program is your program, my program is my program.
100%.
Two different schools, very different way. The vast majority of my athletes are either club year round or multi-sport year round. I broke it down about it. It's about 85% of my athletes are year round in one way, shape or form. And I looked at myself and was like, man, that's a ton of stress. And if anybody's been involved with club, sometimes club is like,
it's grueling,
crazy. I had some volleyball girls tell me they played 10 matches over last weekend.
And
part of me just wants to scream from the rafters, stop it, but that'll never happen. There's too much money, and it's too built in. And I joke around, the club's becoming a four letter word for me. My least favorite thing is, oh, we have club practice from 6 to 9 on a Tuesday night. Like, you have school the next day.
I know.
What are you people doing? Oh, one kid told me that, a club she was part of, they, in the summer, they went 6 to 9 in the morning. And then again, 6 to 9 at night. I was like, that's the dumbest thing I've heard.
Dude, I can't imagine as an adult being like 13, 14 year old kids. Perfect. Six to nine a.m.
You know, 6 hours a day,
two a days, club volleyball. Let's get with it. But
let's destroy our bodies. So that's neither here nor there. But I know
where you're going, and with we can't avoid the AAU club travel ball week 7-on-7 world, right? So I think what you're getting at is, now that we've seen that that's unavoidable, you had to pivot, right, on how you did apply training.
I did have to pivot. I don't do any true off-season training during the school year. I really don't. Mm-hmm. And so I have variations, of course. Like, if a kid's not playing a sport, not doing anything, I'll vary it up for him. But right. The actual skeleton of the program is just a 9-month year-round training program where we try to keep, you know, volume relatively lighter depending on the kids. And, you know, it's very much undulating. It's kind of weird. I base it linear, but I undulate that thing like crazy. Because I have to keep a program. Because one thing.
So Clay, we've got some high school coaches. Sorry.
I keep things pretty straight, and then I throw curves in when I need to.
No, sorry, I'm not saying insult them, bro. Say undulating, I just meant for you. I wanted you to explain what that means.
So change the stresses across the week. And so instead of,
it's not just going to go up, right?
Or if you reverse it, down.
Yeah.
One day might be up, one day might be lower, and kind of go up and down. If I pissed off anybody, my bad.
No, I don't think you're pissing people off. I just don't. I always want to try to cover my bases for those that are listening.
No, I got you. And that's actually a big fault. And that's a pitfall that I've fallen into as a strength coach.
I definitely have 100%.
Absolutely. Where we eat, breathe, live this stuff, it's our career. Nobody loves this more than we do because we chose it for our profession.
Don't ever tell a coach that you're using post activation potentiation. Just don't.
They don't care about that.
Like, I'll never forget Clay. So last year, this is a great example. I got carried away. So I got popped with a COVID exposure early, but we were still training, and my basketball coach was, you know, we're an Apple certified school. So we got all this technology. We got this huge TV in the weight room. And what they were going to do is they were going to FaceTime me in onto the screen where I can see
the weight room. Don't tell me that. Well, all this stuff. Public school live, bro. Don't hear that.
But here's the funny part. I'm not kidding. So coach was walking and was like, we're working, coach, we got him going. And I'm looking, and I was like, hey coach, you know, if you ever see, if we're ever doing a row, to make sure the shoulder's moving back. And he literally flipped the iPad in front of me. He said, Cody, I don't give a crap about any of that stuff. And I was like, fair. I mean, okay, as long as guys are hitting shots, I mean, we're cool. I mean, exactly. You can't take that to heart, you know. You can't take that personal.
Nah,
you know?
and that's where you just gotta kind of let stuff go sometimes, and you got to remember that these coaches, you're their assistant, especially if that's the head. And you know what? If you have a good relationship with your coaching staff, your life's going to be a lot better,
dude. Yeah, really, man, 100%.
It really is.
The best thing I ever did, and is that last year, I went to practice every day. Now, not because I had to. I don't have to in my position. A lot of coaches do. I don't have to. Like, when it comes to football practice, I did not go to practice because I had to. I went because I wanted to add value, and I wanted to show these coaches that I'm at practice. I basically was like the equipment manager. You know, like if you've been at D2 football practice, right?
I have.
Equipment manager is probably also spotting the ball. He's also moving he's equipment. He's calling out periods. He's doing so. I'm helping logistics of practice that they don't have to worry about, so they can coach. You know, and I was like, this is going to, but then I got to sit in on staff meetings. I got to listen to the lingo, try to get to where I understand our overall strategy. They started to notice that I cared, and then they brought me inside the circle, you know, and then our relationship just got so much better. And now we can talk about things about where our kids are at. I can say something and it mean more to a situation. I can tell my head coach, hey, our guys are dragging, like, as far as practice time on our feet this week, we need to be careful. You handle it as you see fit. This is just what I see. And he takes it, and that means something. You know, like, it's just a huge point with strength coaches that, and this was really hard for me to learn, and you can probably attest to this too, like how often bouncing from job to job year after year, and it takes a while to establish relationship with coaches that – you know, I went job, and then got to my high school job and didn't realize, like, I never even lasted a full year to get back to a same cycle. Like, I never got to see two off seasons or two in seasons with one team until I got to high school. And if you don't do that, you can't see relationships evolve, you know, and you can't just come in and say, well, I'm the professional, listen to me. I'm like, man, they've been doing this for years. You know, like, my head basketball coach is the second. We have the second most state titles in the entire state of Alabama of any classification. Yeah. He's won 4 state titles. He's had 2 McDonald's All-Americans. You really think I'm going to march up in there and tell this dude what he's going to do? No chance.
Not until
he gets to know Cody, not strength coach Cody Hughes with XXSMSFP2.ED distinction of whatever behind my name. Because that stuff don't mean anything to those guys.
It really doesn't. And honestly, you know, and you know, all those letters behind those names, in actuality, you know, that doesn't make you a good – if you have those, that doesn't make you a good coach. Yeah. It doesn't.
That's a harsh reality, but it is
a reality. It is a harsh reality. It's a reality that you can have those behind your name. That doesn't mean you can coach. It means you pass the test. Now, this is what it does mean. It means – you are trying to separate yourselves and you're trying to elevate the profession. And, you know, I want to make this crystal, crystal clear because I have many friends in the NHSCA and outside the NHSCA who are strength coaches that don't have those letters behind those names.
Mm-hmm.
They're fantastic strength coaches. Correct. Here in the state, there are awesome strength coaches that don't have my certifications. And I've learned tons from them and I value their friendship. And I am so glad I'm a part of their life and they're a part of mine because I bounce ideas off them all the time. And you know, there's quite a few of them, you know, Ben Brandow, Chris Musselman, just to name 2 off the top of my head. I know there's plenty of others. Having certifications behind your name, all that does is just saying that you're trying to add to your expertise. That's all it is. It's just saying that I knew enough to pass the test. Now, I do believe they're very important. And I do believe to move our profession forward, that has to become more standard. And that's, you know, we're both NHSCA guys and there's many NHSCA guys who are listening to this podcast. That's why I'm really glad they're coming out with their certification. I'm looking forward to studying and getting that.
Yep.
Because it's adding extra value onto our profession. Because it's one thing to say, I know, it's another thing to say, I know enough that I'm going to go prove it with this thing. Now, is that the end all be all? Absolutely not.
Well, it's just not a pre-qualification process. We haven't had anything that's built towards the high school setting either, because that's what the NHSSA is going to be for, is actually built towards the high school setting, because you got to know curriculum. Absolutely. You have to know how a high school functions. You're a lot more inside the function of the school than as a strength coach in college. Like, as far as the academics go, you're about as far removed as possible.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's not the case in high school, you know. So
you got to do other stuff, but – And you know, even though I have great friends that, you know, maybe don't have those certifications, I will say that I've met more good coaches who have them than good coaches who don't.
Yeah. And it's very true. And it's a difference between just capability and pre-qualification. Cause at the end of the day, it all comes down to how well you structure your interview. And that's kind of where the gap needs to be bridged, in my opinion, as far as high schools go, or really anyone that doesn't have a strength coach and you just have admin, you don't really have anybody that's experienced in this area, is learning how to interview and try to see if somebody's quick. Because at the end of the day, a resume can only take you so far.
No.
Now, a resume can glaring can get you. That's the thing my mentor always told me. He said, having your CSCS will not get you a job, but it will get your resume thrown in the trash if you don't have it.
Exactly.
You know, like it'll remove you from a job, but it will not get you a job. The interview process is a much more important, but we've got to get better with that. You know, it can't be somehow we've got to vet each other out in a way that's better than just like, hey, I want to hire this guy because he used to work with me here. He's my buddy, you know, here that I want to hire this guy. And it's really hard for me to say that because like a lot of, in just about any industry, you know, networking is super important and prior relationships is going to help build trust. And if you're going to hire somebody, you need that involved. You need that involved very much 100%. So. 100%. But the interview process has got to somehow have like these red flags and these markers that you've got to hit in order to qualify to get a job. Cause like, I don't know where we go in the industry to hire, vet out, our, you know, cause the thing that I see is that I don't think many young coaches get to a point to where it's not a big deal. It's when you've been in the industry for so long and you get super comfortable and now you feel like you're an untouchable because you were a Power Five strength coach and you did this and that, and you get to a certain level to where it doesn't matter if I get fired or not. I'm just going to bounce back based off of my logo history, you know? And then you get real comfortable with the power you have, and then a kid ends up dying. You know, that's the scary part, is when coaches get so comfortable with their power in a college weight room. And I've seen it. Man, it's intense. I get it. But, like, how can you get to that point to where – you're not worried in the back of your head, you know, like that's where the industry's got to move.
You brought up a good point with, you know, student athletes at risk. I joke around. I tell the kids all the time, you know, especially when we first start a semester, I get new kids. I have new groups and, you know, I have fresh faces. I tell them I am in the most dangerous room on campus. Ain't nobody getting hurt, nobody's dying in the English classroom. Nobody's getting hurt in math. You might get your feelings hurt every now and again, but you're not getting physically hurt. You can get physically hurt in here. You can get messed up real bad if you're not paying attention and if you're not staying focused on it. So that's why number one thing that's got to go out when they come in is earbuds. Like, and I'm sure you see them on your campus all the time. Kids just living those.
Kids try to sneak it in too. They'll be like turning their head this way, and the AirPods like, over here.
Yeah, dude, take that. Like, bro, come on, man. It's bright red, and your complexion isn't that dark. Like, it's not camouflaged. So, first of all, take those out. Like, and that's why it's important to have qualified individuals in there. Qualified, and if they're certified, you know, great.
Right.
A qualified individual who knows what they're doing, because rule one, do no harm. Rule one, you got to keep kids safe. And especially, you know, I used to think like a big group in the college sector was like, you know, the football team or the baseball team with like 40, 50 kids and like 3-4 coaches in there. I used to think that was a big group. When you have groups of 50 and it's just you and you got to keep them organized, that's a whole nother story.
Yep.
You know, we can, you know,
that's the norm in high school too, guys. Like, you guys understand that's the norm. Like, what I have is not normal.
No, I'm trying to keep my groups down lower, but, I mean, a class that I team taught, we had over 90 kids and two instructors. Like, that's
a lot. And
it was a lot of kids. It's tough to keep 90 kids focused and engaged. And not only, and the exercise selection that you'll be able to have with 50 kids is going to be way different than the exercise selection you're going to have with 20 kids. Mm-hmm. That's why, you know, people might see, like, you know, for example, someone on social media, pro athlete doing this, like, look what these guys are able to do. Like, yeah, but they got, you know, groups of three. It's going to be way different. I got 50 of y'all and I got 4 trap bars. Like, I'm going to find a way to replicate this. But that's where the knowledge and understanding, the qualified meeting the academia being the certifications. That's where the overall wisdom of the profession allows you to understand that, you know what, I can get a similar stimulus to create the change, to adapt to sport, to get these kids better with this versus what I want to do.
Yeah,
that kind of makes sense.
To me, and this is just my opinion, but a qualified professional is not the one that necessarily has a lot of knowledge, right? But has the wisdom to know when to apply and when not to apply. So like I heard somebody say that, I heard Jordan Shallow, he's inventor of Prescript and he's a chiropractor, powerlifter, strength coach. He talked about, well, I went to chiropractic school for 4 years, not to learn all this anatomy and this, but to learn when, not how to crack your neck, but when not to, because it looks like cancer.
Makes sense.
Like there's a lot that goes into that. And that's what people need to understand, is that coaches that need to be able to see things happening before it happens, make an adjustment to get rid of something that could have happened, right? If, for example, what happened to me today, we're lifting in our boys basketball group, first lift of the week. We're in pre-huddle, getting ready to go. Head coach got something to say. He's like, all right, boys, we've got 4 games this weekend in our play dates in the team camp tournament. And I went, okay, I thought we had games this weekend, but okay. And then we start training and I glance at our card and I saw we had 4 sets of 6 on RDL. And I was like, okay, 24 reps of hamstring intensive. We got pretty hard practice today and we got 4 games on the weekend. That's why I cut it right then. I said, hey guys, cut your RDL reps in half. Don't be afraid to go heavy, cut them in half. Like I just said it on the fly when we got there. Hey, when you get to RDL, cut them in half. And that's just me thinking ahead. Like I want to make sure we stay healthy. We're in June, you know, basketball team's not, I'm not trying to make them into world beaters right now. And in June in high school, at least here in Alabama, is a very huge skill opportunity time. They have a lot of skill opportunity. Yeah. So they're developing basket. It's a second in season for us. The weight room, when we get to August is when we start crushing the weight room for basketball and get into a preseason mode. Get like a good 8 weeks off season, kind of what summer looks like for football. That doesn't happen for basketball until about August. So I had to make that decision. And the only reason I have that decision, one, I did have the knowledge, but I've also seen it applied. And I also understand how soreness is created. Also know that, you know, if you have a lot of hamstring fatigue and try to do something powerful, there's something bad can go wrong. You know, something bad can happen. So why would I take that risk? Right. I would much rather be 80% prepared and 100% healthy than 100%. You know what I'm saying? Then 100% prepared and 80% healthy. I would much rather my guys be healthy. Now,
absolutely, health drives performance every time.
On the flip side of that, though, you said do no harm, and that's, to me, that's, it's true, but it's cherry picked, right, from the health industry. But sometimes coaches like to disguise do no harm as do no good, like we're scared to death to get our kids strong, scared to death to push our kids hard, scared to death to do, like we're getting caught up into this flip side, this, and I don't like to use the word soft, but in this mentality where we're just going to kind of, you know, marshmallow our kids and go, oh, well, do no harm. Right. This is the flip side of things, right? I know what you meant, Clay. I'm not saying you didn't mean it.
No, I know exactly what you're saying.
Sometimes we got to do something hard so that when harm comes, it don't match what we did. As far as, think about, when you talk physiologically, just thinking about strength capacities and our tissue capability. Like, can our tissues handle a certain amount of force at certain amount of speeds during the game? Like, if we don't train hard, we're not prepared for those things. So that's an example, right? Like, sure. So make sure that we are doing things hard is not a problem. Having our kids strain is not a problem. It's when and why and how, right?
Well, you know, it's the right tool for the right job. You know, a Phillips screwdriver is awesome until you have to have it screw in a flathead screw. And so just understanding where it's at, and this is something I actually cherry pick from you, but the different volume intensities throughout a lift. So like, for example, if I have a group, and because lots of times it's only really summer and after school that I get kids in one group altogether in my classes, it's usually a hodgepodge. I don't know if it's like that for you, but I can imagine other coaches, it's a hodgepodge.
Yeah.
Or I'll basically have three different, rep intensity levels. Like the sets will all be the same. But off season, kids, if you're off season, you'll have the highest amount of volume. In season, usually is cut in half. And then if you have a game day, usually we're working some sort of double, triple, somewhere around there. And then there's just times to know when to say yes, when to say no. Got a kid. And that's where I love it. That's where you're just pulling kids aside and talking to them. How are you feeling? And actually building a trust. And they're like, oh, I'm feeling good. Like, nah, how are you really feeling? Feeling pretty wide, coach. Okay, this is what I want you to do instead. We're supposed to catch the cleans. I want you doing a high pull instead. I want you being fast, explosive from the ground. When we link it to this, I want you pulling. I want you hitting over this certain speed. Don't worry about the catch. Just focus on a fast, bowing explosion. Okay, great. Okay, perfect. Another example. I had a kid who just got done pitching, and that pitcher, and I asked him, and it was, of course, it was a showcase. Winter showcase. I asked him how many pitches you throw this weekend. He's like, I don't know, but it was a lot. I was like, we talking like over 200. He's like, coach, they probably stopped counting after 200. I was like, awesome. So this thing is guaranteed to be really not doing good. And on Mondays is our big squat Monday. It's usually when we squat is first day of the week, freshest after the weekend. That's when I like to get it. Then usually we have dynamic days in the middle of the week, heavy Friday. That's usually how the programs are set up. And it's like, squat would be really, really not good for this kid right now, especially if it's a back squat. So switched him up to a hip press, but I told him, hey, you're going to, well, hip thrust. So set him up on a hip thrust. All right, kid. You're going to do this, but you have to have this certain amount of weight, and you got to have a two second pause at the top. And tell him, as long as you can handle it, feel free to go up and go heavy. He killed it. Great posterior chain work. Wasn't soft. Got better.
Yeah.
Just a little different way. A little more posterior versus, you know, more anterior base versus squat. But it's the practical application of, like, is this what's best for this kid right now?
Yeah.
Is this what's best for him? He's still find a way to develop lower body strength, especially within his posterior chains. Maybe, you know, not getting, you know, quads as much as I like, but I can get that a little bit later down the road. And so when you build a relationship, you can still train kids, but sometimes you just got to understand that, you know, I just got to go a different route than what I originally wanted to go. And that's why I joke around that all my programs are written on the board, because they can be erased easily.
Yeah. I love that. Switched up. I really love that. And then, you wouldn't have been able to do that with that kid on the fly if you didn't already.
Also, I have to buy my own cardstock. That's why I don't use it. I don't feel like paying for cardstock.
Yeah,
I just print out sheets and write it on the board.
You know, like that. That's another point to bring up, like that you can't judge these coaches based off what you see. Cause like, that's why I feel so, cause I'm like, guys, I'm spoiled. I have unlimited printing privileges. I have iPads on every rack. I've got ridiculous sore necks room. That doesn't change the fact of whether I'm a good coach or not. It just gives me an opportunity to do more. That's all, you know, and it gives me an opportunity to be more organized. You know, I have these spreadsheets and stuff that I do and the cards that I print out, but Clay, like if I had to buy my own car stock, I'd be doing the same thing as you do, man. I'd be doing the same exact thing. Like it doesn't change.
It's the practicality. It's the deliberate programming. It's the instruction. It's taking the feedback, and it's the improvement of the person. It's adding value, and not just value on the field. Because at my school, we usually graduate a little over 200 kids. We usually send anywhere from about 8 to 12, sometimes a little more to that, to the next level every single year. And, you know, mostly that's junior college, NAIA, Division II, Division III, the occasional Division I every now and again, because that's our population. Ain't nothing wrong with that. Oh, another thing that grinds my gears, people thinking that Division I or bust. If you are getting recruited, you can play ball. Like, there is – stop treating – the fact that you're getting an offer from a D2, D3, NAIA, or JUCO, like it's some sort of disrespect. like I,
you know, I have my own feelings on that.
That's a big pet peeve of mine. But you know what? If somebody wants, I've always lived that, you know, go where you're wanted, not where you want to go. Because if you're going where you're wanted, they want you.
Well, you know what? Let's open that can of worms. You opened it.
Let's do it.
It's,
I did open it.
You did
it.
I
opened that.
There was no Hot Take Tuesday this week. So nope. You finna get it in one episode.
Let's get Hot Take Tuesday.
So you're getting it on Friday. So you're getting a double dose here. All right. So D1 or bust. Okay. Let's talk about the root issue, right? You got to get down into the soul here. You got to get down into the actual problem. All right. First, it starts with parents. It starts with a social construct of what it looks like. I can't tell you how many times I guarantee you that the kid wants, they're living for the Instagram post, the dopamine hit, the signing party, and they could care less if they ever show up on campus. Don't care. That's the worst kind of situation, right? That it's got to have a name that carries weight in social circles, both with parents and with kids. And that's terrible. And it starts with the kids, man, because I've literally heard parents like, oh no, we ain't entertaining that. Oh, we ain't entertaining that. We D1. And I feel really bad for the kid because the kid, when a parent is that ignorant and they're, the only reason that they're doing that is because they're concerned with what they're going to be perceived in social constructs, and people don't, they won't admit it. They think they're getting a better opportunity to be exposed. I'm like, dude, you're being exposed. You live in a world of exposure. Whether you like it or not, you're exposing well or you're exposing bad. And that brings up to my own story. People don't believe this story, but it's true. I turned down a Division I scholarship to play D2. I did, personally. So I understand what it is. And I wouldn't have done it on my own. I did it because my father is a lot smarter than me being a 17-year-old kid. Okay, he didn't make me get that. But what happened was, went on two visits, right? Scholarship money, exact same. As far as how much school was going to cost, I was a baseball player. You don't get full rides. It doesn't work that way.
No.
But the money wasn't the problem. Same exact scholarship, both good situations, could have went to both. Jacksonville State University, University of Montevallo. Those are my two offers. Jacksonville State plays Division I, Montevallo plays Division II. Jacksonville State saw me at one showcase, brought me on one visit, and then in the interview went sideways, okay, because I was a two-way player. I was a pitcher, and I was an outfielder and a hitter. Wasn't sure what I was going to do in college. I was getting recruited as both. I asked the question in both official visits, where do you see me fit into your program? How do I help you most? Probably because my dad helped me ask that question. And the Jacksonville State coach looked at me and go, I don't know. I'm not sure. No, I don't know where you fit in, but you got some tools, so we think we can have you. I was like, really vague. Okay. Then Montevallo, the pitching coach, came and watched me play football. Not his sport. Took time out of his recruiting trip to come watch me play, sit down with my parents, told me exactly where I fit in. You have a chance to play as a freshman. Once you do this on the mound, we want to give you a chance to hit, to do this, to play right field or play first base. We want you to close for us your freshman year, and we're going to see where that goes, but you have a really high chance of playing early if you come in and earn it. We see you as a top priority in our class, and we think you can really help us win. And after sitting down and talking to my dad, and he's like, where do you fit the best? Like, really think about it. And where are you wanted most? Like, and you know, this is not going to be a popular choice. And I made the choice to go to Montevallo because I felt like I was wanted more. And I had a wonderful experience. Lettered all 4 years, played all 4 years. Now I was a closer my freshman year, and I was a 3-year starting pitcher after that. Enjoyed my experience, got my degree, and don't regret it one bit. But I don't know how many, I wouldn't have done that if it wasn't for my parents being great. Like, I really mean that. As a 17-year-old kid, I would have went D1 no matter what. D1 offer, I'm going. Yeah. You know, and that's why I'm not giving myself credit there. And that's hard because at the end of the day, the better players are at Division I, and that's just the truth, right? And you want to feel like you're the better player. You know, these high school kids want to feel like they're the better player. Yeah. Well, they also don't understand. Like, we've had a kid that was like, well, my dream school is Florida State, Florida, Kentucky, you know, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, if always I can always fall back on a UAB or South Alabama. I'm like, fall back. You want to go practice with these guys right now?
Have fun, man.
D2 football. You've seen it. Like our football guys, like, oh, West Alabama. I was like, go practice tomorrow with those dudes and come back and be like, holy crap, I don't want any part of that. Those dudes will knock your head off. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, and one thing I love to do, and that's it, and one of my favorite highlights to share with kids that think that, you know, their only good players are at Division One. When I was at Angelo State, our quarterback, Kyle Washington, he was at McNeese. I think he's at Franklin Pierce. I might have those two mixed up, but okay. K-Wash is one of the best people I've ever met in my life. Not only one of the best athletes I've ever worked with, but like one of the best people. And I'll have to let him know I gave him a shout out on this podcast. But I believe he finished his career at Angelo State as a 3-year starter with 130 touchdowns. He was a Division II Heisman finalist.
Wow.
Unreal. Out of the four schools I've been at, best football player I've ever seen. And he was a Division II guy. Had a tryout with the Eagles. Didn't quite make it, but it's so hard to get anything with the NFL tryout. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Unreal football player. And I'll show the kids his highlights. He's like, this kid was a Division II and he dominated and he was amazing. Oh, and just a heads up. He was also one of our strongest kids, and he's 6'6", 225. Like, the 6'6" dude puts up close to 500 on squat and like would power clean 315 plus on the reg. It was crazy. Like,
yeah.
And run a 4.4. It was absolutely nuts.
But he played D2.
He did. And he dominated D2 because, you know, the opportunity was there. He took it and he did great. And when you actually break down the stats of how many kids go on to play at the college level, I believe football, it's 4.5% of high school players play college. I might be a little off now, but I believe it's around the 4-ish%. So when you flip that, okay, so if the top 4% of all high school football players in America play college, Division I, II, III, NAIA, JUCO, whatever, across all the levels, that means you have to be the 96th percentile to make it. That's really good. And so what I tell kids all the time is, okay, you want to go play that. What are you doing to separate yourself? And if you're getting a look, you can play, because that means you're one of the top percentile that is getting even just remotely looked at. You don't know these schools' names because they're in Arizona, but I'll list all these different schools. Like, I guarantee you they got talent at this school, this school, this school, this mm-hmm. school. Oh, and that's just our side of town. Let's go to the other side of town. They got talent at this school, this school, this school, this school, this school. Oh, let's take a look at California. They got talent in California. They got talent in the South. They got talent in Texas. They got talent in Florida. Talent's not rare. There's talent and ability everywhere. It's the habits and, you know, your behaviors that separate yourself.
That's where we come into play too. Like, we help with developing in those characters and stuff.
And that's the value that we bring to let the kids know that, hey, you know, you want to play this? Awesome. Let's make it. Let's get you playing, but we got to make some changes. And so, you know, to go back to the D1 or bust, if you bust your ass and you work your butt off and you do everything right and a D1 comes calling, congratulations, man. I'll be the first one at that signing party. I'll shake your hand. I'll congratulate you, because we got two baseball players that are Kansas right now from my high school. Mm-hmm. Shout out Ryan and Seth. You're doing awesome.
Yeah, man.
Love those kids.
That's great.
Doing great. Now, I also got some other baseball players who went some other places to some junior college. My guy, Jacob McLeod, who's at a local junior college, JMAC, just came off a great season. I love them both equally, because that's the opportunities they got. They're making the best of it. And at the end of the day, your value as a person isn't depending on what sport you play.
Yeah, that's really deep. And these high school kids don't get that. That's what we're trying to teach them.
I didn't get that when I was 17.
Heck,
I was,
no.
I
was, not even
I was
close.
I was a football player and a thrower. Like, that's my life. That's what I do. They don't get that, which is circling back to you. That's why we're there as coaches and as mentors to shape them as humans. So for my 8 to 12 kids that do go play, yes, they're physically prepared to go play at the next level, but I'm also physically and mentally preparing these kids for the next phase of their life when they're going into the different programs. One of my favorite kids, he worked with me for 4 years at Estrella. His name was Quentin. Best nickname I ever gave a kid. He was vibing to 2 Chainz one day and It's like, man, Q Chain's like some 2 Chainz, and he was Q Chain's from now on. Great, best nickname in the business.
Love it.
He got accepted into a nuclear program with the Navy.
Wow.
Straight out of high school. He's going, like, he'll be operating nuclear reactors. You think they paid chump change for that? Heck no, they're not.
No, they don't.
Q-Chain's going to make some money in life.
That's great.
Didn't play that much. Special teams guy. Varsity letter on wrestling. You know, in 2 years, either 2-3 years, not that many people outside will know the contributions that he had to the team. Not that many. His picture will be up on the region champ. You know, his picture will be up on there. But the lessons that he learned in my weight room will go far into his future. And that's the whole point.
People don't, these kids don't understand. And they think we're playing with, now that, like you said, talent's not rare. When the first thing they're going to cut on is the film.
Yeah.
And one, they're going to go, do they have the ability to play at our level? Boom, check, yes. Okay, they do. Next question. What do they do when the ball's not coming their way? How do they act around their teammates? Right? What's their body language look like? You know, how what do they see just strictly from film? Because if you see any red flags, I guarantee you there's 10 other guys that are all star hustling to the football that have a higher motor that are going to block when the ball's not away from them, that's going to give a lot of effort when you're not. And, like, that's one thing that some of our players don't understand. We have a player that's being highly, highly recruited and one of the top players in Alabama. And he struggles with body language. And especially in the weight room because he hates lifting. Loves football. Hard worker. Just hates lifting. I get
sometimes
it.
Sometimes you got kids like that. We had a kid like that. It's not their thing.
It's not. And that's okay. And I'm not going to try to force a round peg into a square hole. But I have to tell him, I was like, look, man, I don't want you to act excited because you love it. I want you to change your body language because when you get to the SEC or the Big 10 or Big 12 and you lift with these guys, they're going to rip you apart if you don't, because the next guy, the guy that's literally at your same rack is just as good as you, whether you know it or not. And how you act in that moment is where you're going to separate yourself, whether you get reps or not, because the talent's going to be somewhat equal. Like, train this now. Do this now. Our head coach says all the time, they don't ask about stats. They don't care about your 40 time. They can see all of that from film. Film is they see how good you are, right? They ask, what kind of kid is he? Do their grades qualify? If your grades don't qualify, it don't matter.
That's a big one.
Because if the GPA is down, your name is scratched. Move on. I'm not. Recruiters only have so much time. If you can flip your mindset and start thinking of it in a business mindset, right? Because time is money. You have recruiters only have so much time they can spend on the road. You've got to get the best prospects to replace the next prospect that you just signed. You only have so much time. If there's a glaring red flag, why would they spend an extra second at that game? Or an extra second in your house, or an extra, why would they even come by to watch you play if you have shown time after time on the field, one, that you're lazy, or two, that you're not going to get your grades up. So it doesn't matter. I'm going to find somebody else because they've got to be able to produce talent at a certain level at those levels to win. Cause at the big time in the SEC, Pac-12, Big 10, if you don't have talent, you are going to lose. It's just what it is because it's that big of a deal. It's that competitive.
1% of that 4%.
Yes, the absolute elite of the elite.
Echelon.
Yeah. So don't be like, can't get your feelings hurt when you're getting courted by a D2, but that big offer's not coming. At what point do coaches, can you check a kid and let you know, like, dude, you're not that good? No. Like, I'm glad I'm not a sport coach. I'm glad I don't have to look a parent in the eye and go, yo, your son's not Cam Newton. Your son's not LeBron James. Your son's not Mike Trout. I'm sorry. He's not, you know, and it comes down to delusion and honesty. And honestly, I'm going to table that because you and I are both fathers. And I know that the parent goggles are coming and everybody's, we're going to see the world of our kids. And I just pray that I get released from that because I want to, and I think I'll be okay because we've seen a lot of athletics in our life. Yeah. We're not going to be that naive parent, but I'm just worried that I'm going to see my son, if he's interested in athletics, right? If he wants to pursue that, that he's You know that he's the best on the field.
I'm looking pretty lucky right now. My daughter is really trending harder to dance. So, like, I'm really pumped.
You get a chance to be, like, you get a chance to be naive, I guess, and just be normal.
I do have a chance. It's, it's pretty good.
Hey, let's
try that. That could change.
Sure.
But right now, shoot, because when we put on dance party music videos, and that's, because we make her exercise. And
so yeah.
Dance party is an exercise. Man, we put on that dance party, she goes in on that, man.
Awesome. All right, last thing. I want to hit this last topic. We're a little going over an hour here, but you've recently, velocity-based training has become really popular, and yes. I'm dabbling in it with the VMAX Pro through Simply Faster, which is a sponsor of the show. You've been using Push, I'm guessing. Have you used any? So you've been using Push. There's a lot of different, there's a lot more coming out. It's no longer just Tendo and GymAware. There's a lot of different companies and products coming out that are a better price point that people can afford. But I want you guys to understand velocity-based training doesn't mean just training for velocity. It's just another way to measure what's going on. And I want to hear from you what you're seeing through your time using it and how it's benefited your program and your kids.
This has been a huge benefit one of two ways, from the in-person and then dealing with the pandemic, the out of person, because during the shutdown, when I couldn't be on campus, when I couldn't have kids on, I was able to table the Push program, and I was able to basically get all of our PE students on that. And we were able to table that and use that for our classes. So that was a huge benefit. Not what it's intended for, but sometimes you take something adapted to fit your need. We did that during that time. And then during our volume, because I knew that even though the kids were trying to do stuff, it wasn't the same. And they were going to come back very detrained, and they weren't going to come back near what they were. So I had to very closely monitor the kind of volume they got to keep them healthy. I probably was a little bit too much on the marshmallow scale. I wanted to protect them a little more, but given the circumstance, I think a lot of coaches were the same way. And so being able to limit form and get a higher intensity by establishing those speed zones, like you must hit this speed with this weight. You cannot fall underneath it. You have to hit this. And being able to get a higher intent from a lower volume to create that stimulus, I was able to get more with less. And we were able to keep kids fresher when they were not even close to what they physically were beforehand. And so just that auto regulation of making sure that the kids' CNS isn't fried, making sure they're not getting over fatigue, making sure they're not setting themselves up for imbalances, that was absolutely huge. Utilizing that, absolutely love that. And then two, it provides a ton of competition. One of my favorite competitions is set up average velocity on a 1.25 times body weight trap bar speed pull, and then have it relative per body weight.
Mm-hmm.
And so with the 1.25, everybody's taking the same ratio. Fastest one wins. Let's see who's going to win. Warm up sets, get on, go. Hit it for doubles. Let's get 10 of them. Fastest one wins. And go and do that. And the kids compete like crazy because it's that extra feedback. And
right.
What I did in the weight room, I don't know if you saw this picture, but I took my bumpers.
Mm-hmm.
And made a little platform out of bumpers. I put 245s, 235s, 225s, and a 10, and made a little podium in first place. Got to be on the podium. It was a pretty cool little picture.
Yeah.
But just extra competition because it's extra feedback. So one, making sure I regulate the load with the speed zones was huge. Add an extra competition because the kids love to compete with it. And then, I hear my daughter laughing and just broke my train of thought. Oh, and then three. Yeah, I know, right? Hey, even with earpods and I got it. Oh, and then number three, it adds extra validation to what I'm saying, because it's not me saying you're moving that too slow. It's not me saying that you have more weight.
Yeah.
It's the technology.
Yeah.
And this is where, and sometimes you need to flex a little bit. One thing I love to do is I love to show all the different proteins and the college teams that utilize velocity training, which is honestly becoming the standard, especially mm-hmm. bigger places. Like, hey, we have the same principles and the same technology here as they do there. Mm-hmm. You want to be like them, you're using the same principles.
Right.
Let's go ahead and get after it. And they see that. And, you know, sometimes we as coaches can be that a little bit too much of a crutch. You're like, oh, this is what the pros do. Or this is what the college guys do. But it's the same ideology and not trying to mimic it. And so showing that, hey, this is what we're doing. This is what's there. This is the future. And this is where the sports science is meeting the strength and conditioning on a budget. There's a lot more things you can do because there's a lot of things in sports science. We can go into force plates. We can go into, you know, GPS. We can go into a lot of stuff. But if you're at a school, unless maybe it's yours, but if you're at a school, you're not going to have that on your budget. And that's where VBT offers the sports science integration with the strength conditioning while still being able to be part of a manageable budget.
Yeah, it's. I think that that's really going to be the next part as far as in most weight rooms because the price point's coming down so much. Well, and if you guys want to talk more, you know, like about push, reach out to Clay. If you want to talk about VMAX Pro, reach out to me.
Absolutely. I'd love to help you guys out there, you know. I think I'm a little more of a push loyalist. You're a VMAX Pro loyalist and say, okay, some people like Whoppers, some people like Carl's Jr. Or I guess Hardee's since you're in the South.
Yeah.
That threw me for a loop the first time I went to Florida.
Yeah.
I saw the star and said, Hardee's, like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Why does Carl's Jr. say Hardee's? Different differences. But ultimately, it's different packages. And yes, they do different things, but it's the same thing.
If you can learn to use the information,
if you can use the information, you'll get a ton out of it. If it's just numbers on a screen and you don't know how those numbers apply, you're not getting much out of it.
Well, objective data is always going to drive, you know, competition. A radar gun in baseball, you know, a stopwatch when you're running. You know, if you time things, it's all of a sudden is going to make things more competitive. It's going to bring competitive juices out when there's a marker and there's a scoreboard. It's basically what it is. It's a scoreboard and seeing what you're doing. And it's just going to bring out good. It's just really good technology that can help bring out what we're trying to bring out and give them a reason of why they should try to increase bar speed and not. And also with bar path technology that's coming out as well to help show kids that, hey, if you're actually really good at the clean and you time it right, you keep the bar close, your peak velocity is going to be higher. You know, you can't cheat it, you know, and having good coaches too. Don't think that technology is going to replace a good coach because it's not. Technology is going to miss reps. It's going to give you a weird reading. It's not going to coach you. It's not going to get to know you. So
yeah, I made a mistake. I accidentally plugged it in as kilograms instead of pounds, and suddenly this volleyball player is.
I can see how that could be dangerous.
Yeah, suddenly this volleyball player.
135 kilos.
Yes, exactly. It looked a little different on the data sheet. Everybody else says this one volleyball girl's like, man, super high. Like, oh, and that was Coach Blake then, my bad.
Yeah, no doubt.
Or when you accidentally plug in, I was doing sumo deadlifts and I accidentally plugged in kettlebell sumo deadlifts instead of barbell and it doesn't work. Like, that one's on me.
Yeah.
It doesn't replace good coaching.
Yeah, no doubt.
Technology only adds to what the coach has.
Right.
If the coach relies on it, it's not going to go. It has to be a toolbox. It has to be a tool in the toolbox.
Well, man, this is a great conversation. I wish we could go on longer, and I'm sure we'll end up revisiting this again. You've been a great guest. I really appreciate what you do for the profession. I really appreciate, again, what we covered in the beginning, what you did for me. Just keep being you, man. Don't ever stop being you. I try to tell that to everybody, even when people don't like it, always be you. And your story matters. If you're listening to me, I want you guys to understand that the whole reason I do what I do on social media and what I'm doing with this podcast is because I feel like everybody's story has an opportunity to impact somebody and you don't even know it. Don't be scared to share, have the courage to share, you know, tell your story. Have conversations. You never know when you may impact somebody. Clay had a lot of impact on me. So, man, I just appreciate what you did for me, what you're doing for the profession, what you're doing for your family, what you're doing for your school and your students. So if there's a way that we can reach you, how do we reach you if anybody wants to reach out to you?
Twitter and Instagram. Great, pretty active on both of those. Both of them are the exact same tag, coach_Clay Bewley, CLAYBWLEY. You can also email me if you want to put that in the description, clay.buhsd.org. Mm-hmm. And shoot, if you guys really want to, give me a call, 928-710-4582.
Ooh, that's ballsy. Okay, I thought your phone number. But hey, it's the kind of guy he is, man. Very, very available.
Shoot your shot. Just let me know that you know, if I don't answer numbers, I don't know. So if I don't pick up, just leave a voicemail and be like, hey, I'm Coach so-and-so.
Yeah, no doubt.
A lot of robocalls out there.
Well, Clay, you've been a great guest. I appreciate it. And we will see you guys next week.
All right. Thank you, Cody. Honor and a privilege.